your band, Jets Overhead, you guys are a little bit different in the fact that you and your wife are like almost the anchors of the band. How did that all come to play? I mean, most bands don't really start that way, so you want to just give us a little segue?
Well, you know, it didn't actually start out that way. In fact, the bass player, our bass player Jocelyn, and Piers, our guitar player, were actually, and myself, the three of us were actually in a band, a different band, years before, for several years, and had a bit of, you know, a very modest amount of success as a different act and a different, very different sound, and then we reinvented ourselves in circa 2002 and wrote what is the first EP around the end of 2002, and it was during sort of the years, the first couple of years of the 2000s that I met Antonia, who's now my wife, and we just started singing. Our relationship sort of started because we met like hanging out at parties and shit, and just started singing songs at, you know, house parties. I'd pick up a guitar and start singing some Radiohead song or something, and she would join in and harmonize, and I immediately just realized how incredible she is at finding the right tasteful harmony to any song, really. So that natural talent was something that became obvious to the whole band as we all got to know her, and then it was really... That first EP that we put the music together for, we recorded ourselves, and we asked her to just come and sing some harmonies on it, and they turned out so well that we were like, well, now we gotta, if we're gonna release it with her on the songs singing all these great harmonies, then we're gonna have to tour with her too, so she better join the band.
Yeah.
So and then we were, right around that time, we've kind of been on and off as a couple, like, on and off relationship-wise, like, and it was kind of around that time that she joined the band that I was, like, pulled my head out of my ass and said, okay, you know, I found a one in a million kind of woman, you know, ask her to be my girl too. So
she's not sitting right.
She kind of joined the band, and for a while, actually, for the first couple shows, we weren't together, and it was kind of weird. And I was still kind of being dumb in my early 20s. And
yeah.
Anyway, long and the short of it is, she and I, we got together finally and made it official that we were a couple around sort of the tour at the beginning of when we started touring more seriously with. Jets Overhead and the first EP.
Okay, this is your second album that you guys have produced. Well, how do you think it's different from Bridges?
No Nations was written a lot more as a band. Like, a lot of the way we wrote the music. Bridges was definitely band-oriented writing as well, but in this, when we set out to write the music that ended up on Donations, we really made a conscious effort to write as a band and record all of our jam sessions, and then basically we would weed through hours of recorded sessions of free form spewings of expression, and eventually whittle, sort of preen or pick the best moments from those freeform jams, and then we would kind of take it to another phase of, you know, writing the honing the melodies and arranging songs, and in some cases, say, taking like a one idea and amalgamating it with another idea from another day. That's kind of how we put this record together musically, and then the finishing touches all kind of came from myself and Antonia mostly. Some of the other band members did a little bit with the lyrics and stuff, but it was mostly myself and Antonia just kind of finishing off the lyrics. But we kept a lot of the lyrics themselves that were kind of spur of the moment taken out of the air statements while we were jamming. We kept a lot of those and then just kind of expanded on those as well. So that was kind of cool too. I think more than ever we really let ourselves just be free in the moment when we were recording, like the jam sessions, the writing sessions, and not being like hindered to just kind of express ourselves when it came to actually writing lyrics as well, free form, you know. Because I don't know if you've had any experience with writing songs, but a lot of people, when they write songs, will write the melody but won't have any words yet, you know. They'll just kind of hum a melody or gibberish even, you know, loud, you know, whatever comes out of your mouth kind of. And we were able to get comfortable enough to just kind of let whatever words came to mind come out. And it was funny how a lot of them, including songs like No Nations and Heading for Nowhere, those lyrics were literally just plucked out of the air, you know. They kind of just came with the melody, yeah. All part of a package at once.
I mean, sometimes that works.
Yeah, I think that was one thing we were all really excited about, was that we were able to find moments like that that did work, yeah.
If someone has never heard Jets Overhead, if you could tell them what you guys sound like compared to maybe some other groups or some groups that you guys kind of get your inspiration from. I mean, you mentioned Radiohead before, and then over the press release, Radiohead mentioned a couple of times. So if you could just kind of break down what you think you guys sound like, that would be great. I'm sure tons of people out there want to know.
Well, I think we definitely draw from bands like Radiohead and Coldplay as far as sort of melody is concerned. We're very melody driven, and then couple that with male female vocal harmonies and trade offs where we, you know, trade whoever's singing lead. And you get sort of a Mamas and the Papas kind of vibe as well. So those are two or three bands that I think it would be fair to say we have some similarities to. And then I think we also are really into some of the more psychedelic old school bands like Pink Floyd. Those are some influences. That vibe is definitely something that we've found to influence the way we write our music. And Interpol, for example, for a more modern band, I really, really dig on Interpol as their sound and their vibe as well. So, you know, it's sort of a combination of traditional, like, pop songs mixed with a modern intensity and shoegazer kind of atmosphericness.
Nice.
I haven't been asked that question for a while. I think I had a better answer home for that but a year ago when we were first touring No Nations. But, you know, I think it's best to just let people, in my opinion, let people figure out what they hear. I think that the more influences somebody hears in an artist's music, the better. I think if you are left to just kind of liken a band to, say, one or two other bands,
yeah, it's usually not good.
Maybe the songwriting isn't original enough. I think it's a good sign if you hear people compare your band like multiple times from multiple brains. A whole collection of different artists. I've heard some weird ones for sure.
Awesome. As far as business-wise goes, you guys have done a bunch of very interesting things. Your first album, Bridges, you let the fans decide how much they wanted to pay for the record. Why did you do that? You don't mind me asking.
Well, I mean, I think that was before Radiohead had kind of blown that whole concept wide open.
Yeah, and, you guys were the trendsetters.
Well, we were. were one of them. I think there were a couple other bands out there at the time that had done it, but it was definitely a conscious decision to push the sort of norms of music distribution, put that question out there and see, and also just, you know, as an experiment, let's see what people, what happens here. If we say, pay what you want for our music, will we get money? Will any money come at all? And in fact, you know, on our at our level at that time, a fair amount did come in, you know, for what we were expecting. It was actually a nice surprise to see every day, you know, $2 or $5 or $50. It did, you know, depended on the individual and what they wanted to do. And then at the same time, people were downloading it for free as well. And in our opinion, that wasn't hurting us, really, because we were just glad to know that people wanted our music and were, you know, taking it, spreading it, playing it, enjoying it, hopefully.
I mean, even with the title track of your new album, which you released under a Creative Commons license, which basically allows anyone that's not going to really profit off of it to use it, you know, for, I don't want to say recreational purposes, but it's almost pretty much that on their, you know, on their little website that they're not getting revenue from, home videos, all sorts of things.
Like yeah, that. Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah.
What made you guys do that as well? Is that continuing that motif?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all trying, like the entire industry, we're all trying to find that magic formula that allows bands to make a living and pay their bills and still allows music or intellectual property distribution in general to be more free-flowing than it has in the past. And Creative Commons is a great concept because it kind of strips away a lot of these ridiculous barriers that have been in place for decades because of major companies deciding that, you know, you can't use a Bob Marley song in your graduation home video or whatever, like, that nobody in their right mind could ever actually argue is going to create any profit for the person who's created it.
Yeah.
And yet, if anything, it's going to help that legacy of Bob Marley. And yet, the major companies are still, you know, just putting up warnings and telling people to take down these songs or whatever. So, I think we're just trying to continue to, you know, experiment with what might work for us. I mean, that's why we're using Bandcamp. I think it's a great model for independent bands or even signed bands, whatever you want to call independent is sort of almost a joke now. I mean, we're signed to a label up here in Canada, and we have a label down in the States, and they're great. They've helped us out a lot, but we still do so much of what we have to do on our own, like, in order to succeed in this business. Now, if you're going to be a successful musician, you have to be an entrepreneur, and you have to be working hard every day, not just playing music and going out on tour, but also sitting at your computer and figuring out, you know, how to communicate with fans and how to reach fans and how to get your music noticed the quagmire that is North American music business. I mean, everybody and the dog has a band now, right? So we're just trying to, you know, plot a course that maybe isn't most commonly tread, and Bandcamp's a great method for that because it allows you to provide the user with multiple platforms of, you know, quality of songs or how they want to download them or if they want to order them through the mail or whatever it is, it's all there. So you have just a litany of options that at your disposal, and you can just go for it whatever way you want, including, you know, we still offer Bridges for pay what you want through Bandcamp now, and Yeah, I mean, there's no reason to sort of to subscribe to the old model anymore. So we're just trying to find a way to keep on, you know, breaking new territory.
Absolutely, and I mean, with that, you guys have to be somewhat confident in your ability, because again, most bands generate revenue touring. So do you guys feel that like you're touring enough to kind of like really spread yourselves out? And, like, I mean, all the stuff that you're doing is great. It gets you guys out there more, but the big way, you know, will be
ultimately live. Live,
yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'd say there's two. Yeah, there is. That's one model, which is just tour the shit out of your country or the country beside you, and put up with the many tours where, or shows where you're playing to 10 people or less. And we've done that in the past, here and there. But I think we're trying to reach as maximize our impact, essentially. And that's why coming at it from a more sort of business-oriented angle has helped us get onto some of these bigger festivals in the States, like Bonnaroo last year, and we're playing Coachella and Sasquatch this year, when we really haven't toured the States at all. So I think we're hoping, and it definitely does already seem to be showing, that if you can make enough of a buzz through, you know, critical acclaim and or just word of mouth within the business side of things, you can really go a long way to helping you get these bigger shows that you will then be able to reach a lot of people at once, as opposed to struggling and losing a shitload of money playing, you know, buttfuck nowhere,
yeah.
Which in Canada happens a lot more than down in the States. Like for us up here, we've done those tours where we're playing you know, London, Ontario, and there's five people, you know, on a Tuesday night, and it's just fucking depressing, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, that being said, we're playing a lot more on this record than we have on Bridges or any record to date. The terrain has been more, you know, considerable. So, and we all love to play, but our goal is to hopefully skip the, at this point in our lives, to skip the grueling sleeping on friends' floors and beating ourselves up playing a Tuesday night in Windsor, and going for more higher impact, fewer shows, and then eventually reaching a point where we have a fan base that we, and enough of a buzz that we can start playing, touring, and bringing 100 people out every night. You know, get to that point first before we start doing those, you know, night after night tours.
Yeah, so you're just basically trying to find your own beat to drum to, essentially.
Yeah.
You mentioned the difference between the South and the West album. What's your favorite part of this album? I mean, you guys have worked with people that have worked with Bob Dylan, Talking Heads, and things like that, so there's a little bit more, I don't know, maybe some little bit more prestige around this album. And even though, like, you guys were nominated for awards before, this album was like a little bit of a step up as far as, like, you know, who you guys were associated with. How did that feel, and what's your favorite part of this album?
Well, I'm proud of the cohesiveness of the record as a listening experience. I think it's good choices as far as song range, like the order of the songs, the way the mixers we used for the particular song and how we ordered them in that regard. And I'm pretty excited that it's also been pressed to vinyl. That's something we really were pumped up to finally have a, you know, 8-ounce or eight, whatever it is, 8 grams or whatever it is, of plastic with our noises and somehow ingrained in there, however the hell that works. And I think we're all quite proud of the fact that it's a listening experience front to back, and we hear that quite a bit from people. But you know, it's the kind of record you can put on and just listen to from start to finish. That's kind of something that's lost a lot on this digital distribution era, with everybody just kind of doing their iTunes genius selections or whatever.
Yeah.
We hope that people are listening to it as a cohesive record, and we hear that they are. So yeah, that I think that's one thing we're all proud of, because that's a goal we set out with in mind, and it seems to have taken a bit of come to fruition.
Is there anything else that you want to say about the record or about the band that we haven't touched based on yet?
Well, we're getting better every time we play live, so come and see us and support live music. And if you can make it to one of the festivals. Where are you based out of?
New York City.
Oh, New York City, okay. Well, then fuck. We'll come to you. Don't come.
Thanks.
We'll come to you, and I promise that we'll be back in New York City this year for sure. Yeah, man. And if we can't do it in North America, then we're gonna fucking make it big in China. That's the other thing I want everybody to know. I'm not shitting you, man. We're working hard on that. It looks like we're going back again in a couple months, and China's a lot of fun too. So.
Thanks.